Dr. Amir Ammari thinks about theater and architecture, and in an article titled Imaginary Placements, he outlines how the specifics of the design and the particular experience of the movie theater from the start helped sustain our assumptions about the relationship between reality and representation. For example, one important element in his analysis concerns the movie theater's facade. From the early days as vacant storefronts to the contemporary theaters, it is the facade's entryway that would serve as the border between the real and the imaginary, the ticketed passageway from everyday life into the construed other world of the movies. He contends, in its earliest incarnation, and that would be about 1891, the moving picture was confined within the well-defined box of the kinetoscope. To see the moving picture, one had to look inside the box from the outside through a peephole. The box, despite all its variations in form, material, and ornamental detail, retained the moving picture within limits at a clear distance from the viewing subject, who initiated and terminated the viewing process. Since the kinetoscope was self-contained and mobile, it could be placed at any place, as it was at fairgrounds, parlors, arcades, department stores, and so on. The novel displacement of time and space that happened within it remained within wherever it happened to be. Later, vacant stores began their transformation into movie theaters when the visual continuity of their transparent facades was supplanted by a required non-transparency. The implied thickness of this opaque facade was in turn amplified by placing it at a measured distance from the sidewalk, or as in our case, a parking lot. This setback instituted a void that intervened as a forceful divider between the film inside and the world outside. A vacant store became a movie theater, in other words, by withdrawing and distancing itself from its context in the real world. This implied separation was augmented on the street facade with a superimposed gateway imagery whose ubiquity made it, in short order, synonymous with the Nickelodeon. An articulated frame, often employing the classical Greek columns in various degrees of abstraction, was typically superimposed on the physical borderlines of the Nickelodeon's street facade. The inscription of an arch within this frame completed a gateway imagery that more often than not evoked a Roman triumphal arch and the city gate it symbolically embodied. The gateway theme for the movie theater facade became so prevalent that prefabricated facades were offered for sale by various vendors. The Sears Roebuck Company's 1908 catalog, for example, claimed the 5-cent theater is here to stay, and almost any vacant storeroom can be made into a 5-cent theater by removing the glass front and replacing it with a regular theater front, similar to the illustration shown, and that would have been on catalog page 12. The regular theater front is the arch in frame format that served as a forceful dividing line. The Nickelodeon's arch in frame facade also bore more than a passing resemblance to the legitimate theater's proscenium arch. Strategically, however, the Nickelodeon did not erect its proscenium arch at the edge of the stage and the auditorium, but on the sidewalk. As such, the Nickelodeon's audience was made not so much to look at the world of illusion from the other side of the proscenium arch, as they were made to cross it to an elsewhere on the other side of this borderline. In time, the thematic of elsewhere would be fully explored in the exotic interiors of movie palaces. The Nickelodeon's focus, however, was entirely on the fabrication of a divide, the related production of an elsewhere, and the subsequent transition from the place of the real to the place of the imaginary. words of Amir Ameri. Gateway is a great metaphor for us as we prepare to talk with Mandy Pennington. We'll soon learn that books were an early gateway to the world of her imagination and to journeys near and far, past and present, and maybe in that in-between space we just heard about. Mandy Pennington is Director of Digital Strategy at Wilkes University, and she completed her MFA in the Maslow Family Graduate Program in Creative Writing at Wilkes, and she has completed a book as a part of that program. It's titled Gateways, a Memoir. Mandy Pennington invites us to pass through the gateway she creates in her one-person play, Girl Walks Into a Movie Theater. And Mandy Pennington stopped in at the WVIA studios to talk with us about her passion for stories and storytelling and where it all began.
I escaped in books when I was young. I found such comfort in going to the library at my school or in my community, checking out books and just spending hours upon hours just devouring stories. And storytelling is something that I always connected with. I found myself loving the stories that I heard from family members, from friends, watching movies, reading books, seeing plays and musicals, any kind of story I could get my hand on, I was excited about. So it's something that started very young for me, and I didn't, until I was in probably about high school, start to experiment with writing and acting. So it took me a few years to be able to get up the courage to be able to put myself out there, but I've always loved stories.
In high school then, what were you putting down? Family stories? What struck you to put down?
When I was in high school, I thought I wanted to be a journalist. So I got involved with my school newspaper and I started taking on any kind of news writing assignments that I could get my hands on. I loved this idea of telling the truth and getting to figure out creative ways to do that. So I really just jumped in headfirst into journalism, and that's what I thought I was going to do. And then when I got to college, I ended up majoring in advertising and public relations and started to play with a little bit more creative side of it. You know, it's still analytical, but it definitely has an art form to it. So I started to play with this idea of being an advertising copywriter. And then it just kind of came on from there. And then creative writing is something I didn't find until well after college. I had been an active blogger at the time throughout college and even after college. I was very active on social media. So I was familiar with content creation in that way. But I didn't ever think about doing anything with creative nonfiction until I took a writing workshop at Wilkes that focused just on that subject.
Was it like the skies parted? Was it an epiphany? Or was it, let me experiment with this?
It was definitely an experiment for me, but I think it was such an interesting one because I had made a career out of writing for other people, doing digital marketing and doing, you know, freelance writing and journalism, working in all these different types of media, speaking in other people's voices. I felt very comfortable doing that. But this was the first time that I was going to be challenged to do this for myself and to use my own voice. And I'll admit, it was a little scary.
Was the workshop offered by somebody from the creative writing program?
Yes, actually, my dear friend Sam Shirelli, who is the author of Dig, he hosted this creative writing workshop, and my husband and I actually took it together, and we had such a great time. I loved all of the pieces that we created, and there was always something nagging in the back of my mind after taking that workshop that just said, I want to do this more.
Were you on the staff of Wilkes at that point?
No, not yet. So I was working in digital marketing. I was really focused on that. And any creative writing I did was just kind of here and there for fun. I had a group of friends where we would get together and we would just share pages of things that we just enjoyed writing creatively. But it wasn't something I really thought about and took serious until I became part of the team at Wilkes and I saw this great opportunity. I had heard such wonderful things about the creative writing program. I've had many friends who have gone through the program and said it was life-changing. And now, having just completed my MFA, I can absolutely say that that is true.
You have many choices as a student in that program in terms of the form in which you specialize. And so how did you come to say, well, I want to do this?
Well, I leaned into my journalistic roots to start with. I was very attracted to creative nonfiction. So I chose to focus my master's level studies on that genre. So I got to work with Jessica Goudeau, who is absolutely fabulous. She was such an encouraging coach and a wonderful mentor. And she worked with me on developing a memoir, as well as other pieces that, you know, now I'm done with the program. I'm starting to think about what do I want to go back and work on. But we worked on a memoir together. And once that finished, I was thinking about, okay, now it's time to go on to the MFA portion of the program. I have to do some literary analysis. What do I want to look into? And I had this idea of adapting my memoir into a solo play. So I partnered up with Christine Renee Miller, my other mentor in the program. She's a fabulous actress and a wonderful mentor as well. And we worked on adapting my play, and it has been such an experience. And now it's going to be out in the world.
When you were in high school, were you doing musicals? Were you doing straight plays? What were you up to?
Both. I love to dabble in both straight plays and musicals. I haven't done as many musicals, but any opportunity to be on stage, I love. You know, I've played some really heavy dramatic roles, and then I've also played some that were just so fun and playful, and I enjoy getting to play with both, to be honest.
So you had that experience of being on stage and knowing what that's like. So that would have been a help in coming to terms with the transformation.
It's so valuable to be an actor or to have that experience as an actor when you're going to adapt a work or think about writing anything for the stage. Because an actor approaches a piece of literature, a piece of work very differently than, let's say, maybe a playwright or a director would. So it's so valuable to have that perspective.
And you mentioned hearing stories in your family, and if you created a memoir, you surely had stories to tell about your family. What's in the memoir, and what did you choose to tell us in the play?
Oh, that's a great question. So I think one of the challenges of adapting a work for the stage is that you essentially have to take something that might be said in 300 pages and figure out, all right, how do I do it in 30 to 50? or sometimes a little more, but you have to really think about what to consolidate and what to keep. So as part of my MFA thesis and my work in literary scholarship, I studied how do nonfiction adaptations for the stage work? What are the things they keep? What are the things that they lose? How do they change work or evolve a work to be able to make it work for a dramatic delivery? Since it's very different. In memoir, you get to see the narrator's sort of inner world. You get to see their transformation, and they're able to approach things with perspective. But when you're doing something for the stage, you really only have dialogue and action to work with. You can only see what's happening in the now. So it was definitely a unique challenge.
Can you give us an example of a memoir that was transformed into a play that we might be aware of?
One of my favorite examples is Fun Home. So it's a marvelous piece of literature by Alison Bechdel. It was adapted into an award-winning musical, and it's a perfect example of something that started off as one type of genre and was completely transformed for something else. And I love this adaptation because, you know, they did something really interesting where they created these entire pivotal scenes out of single cells of the original graphic novel. They found a detail, and then they teased it out to find some way to be able to tell this story in a really interesting and thought-provoking way. So I really appreciate that freedom adaptation offers is you can take things in the spirit of the original work and really play with them, and you get to have a little bit more fantasy and theater magic as part of it.
When you talk to people to tease them and say, well, this is what it's about, how do you tell us what you're going to do?
Well, Girl Walks Into a Movie Theater is a coming-of-age story. So it is very much rooted in my teenage experience, and it happens to happen in one of the most interesting places in the world, which was the Gateway Cinema.
And that's in Kingston.
Yes. So it was a movie theater that I grew up in. My mother worked there for many years. My great-grandfather was its first general manager. So it was something that had always been part of my family history and background. And in many ways, the theater itself is a character. So when I was going through the process of writing this and adapting this, I thought about, you know, what does that look like? And I thought, how could I make the theater a character as much as, you know, myself and some of the other players? And then when I started working with Simone Daniel, my amazing director, she's absolutely fantastic. She had the idea to go through and say, okay, could this work as a trailer? Could we play with that movie genre a little bit more? And so we made trailers. So I think you're going to see a really interesting mix of both solo performance as well as media as part of this, which I'm really excited to show the audience.
Was film in your family something special?
It was especially to my great-grandparents. So my great-grandfather, who was the Gateway's first general manager, he loved movies. So anytime I was at his house, I could always find Turner Classic Movies on TV, to be honest. So I spent so much of that time growing up, spending time with them, talking about movies, talking about his experiences, looking through photo albums of movie premieres and things that he had worked over the years, and him just telling me all about this amazing part of the picture business that you don't really think about. When we think about Hollywood and we think about movies, we tend to think about the production process, you know, the actors and actresses and amazing amounts of crew that helps to make a movie project come to life. And this was a totally different side of it. It was what happens once a movie is made. And I got to see it from just a different perspective. So I thought that was so interesting.
What about the experience of being in a place like the Gateway Cinema as a patron? It's a space, it's a place. How did you come to a sense of what that means? What is that space?
So I did a lot of research as part of my memoir writing process, and that included interviews. So I interviewed my old coworkers. I interviewed people who I knew had been to the Gateway many times. I interviewed family members, friends, people who just went to the Gateway as patrons, and I asked them about their experiences, how they felt, what they remembered. What are the things that stuck out to them about that experience? And then I also thought about, what do I love about going to the movies? And even now today, I love going to the movies by myself. It's one of those interesting things where I feel like I could just be myself. I don't have to worry about anyone else who's around me, but we're all having that same experience. We're all watching something together. So even though you might be by yourself, there's still a level of togetherness and community that you're sharing in.
Did you come upon surprises that you said, I didn't remember that?
It was difficult, and I have to say, very surprising. So much came out of the interview process with my friends and family members and previous coworkers. They said and, you know, recounted different moments that I didn't remember or I saw from a completely different perspective. So I think that that was such a worthwhile exercise, being able to see the same story from different points of view and then think about, how does that present narratively? What can I do with that?
Do you play yourself at different ages?
I do. So all the way from a young child up to present day. So that's been really interesting too, thinking about, how do I make myself into a character? And, you know, Simone Daniels is such an experienced theater maker that she instantly kind of honed into this idea that I need to make sure that I had very different personas for each, and has been coaching me through what that's like, how to make sure that I can really embody a smaller child and then myself at 16 and then again as an adult, and make sure that it's really clearly differentiated so that the audience always knows where they are.
Do you move around? Is there blocking?
Yes, there is blocking. And I think that the great thing about this piece is that there's a mixture of moments that are very fun and chaotic. So I do play with the audience a little bit as part of that. And then there are also moments that are definitely more quiet, more serious. And those are ones where I'll be much more controlled with movement. But it's an opportunity to kind of see good contrast, which I love in a play. And I also love in any kind of story. I love when I can see contrast in movement and mood and tone. So it's been such an adventure to get to play with this.
When you're changing your age, do you change your costume?
No. So I'm changing mostly my voice and physicality. So I'm switching so quickly in between characters that it would be a challenge logistically to try to change costumes. So this is very similar to the approach if you're familiar with I Am My Own Wife, where it's one single actor playing a variety of roles and they're switching their physicality and their voice as a way to be able to embody each of those characters.
We often hear it said that theater is a collaborative enterprise. But you temperamentally are a collaborator. You worked with people at the Wilkes program and friends. That's hard, though, sometimes. But you're willing to have that conversation so it can be the best that it possibly can, right?
I think that that's something that every writer should consider. You know, I think that when you're coming from a place of truth and honesty, you're ultimately going to have a work that's going to be better. But I also think that there's so much value, especially as a playwright, as being able to put your work out there, get feedback, and then continuously try to mold it and shape it and improve it using the perspectives of your actors, your directors, your creative team, trusted voices, even your audience. You know, getting to see how audiences react to a work gives you the opportunity then to go back and revise and make it better. And I think that that's something that I have learned so much from the creative writing program, is the magic is really in the revision.
That's an interesting insight. Now, what about family members who are around? Have they read the memoir? Have they read the script?
So the script will be a surprise to my family. They haven't read it, but I have shared the memoir with my parents, and they both have had the opportunity to read it, and you know, they've given me wonderful feedback as well. So they're happy with it, I think. I would hope.
Are you hoping that we will resonate with your experience or go back and say, I never thought of it that way?
I hope so. I think when I've talked about this project with other people, or I've shared snippets of the script or been able to perform parts of it with some of the folks that I've collaborated with on this, you know, they've told me a lot of the same things, and that they see a lot of universal messages and themes as part of this. So whether or not they were passionate about movie going, they know what the experience is of going to a movie theater and being able to disappear for a few hours. And they also identify with those formative teenage moments, the things that I talk about as part of the script, where, you know, you fall in love for the first time, you lose something for the first time, you go through all of these changes and stresses and pressures and expectations, and then you come out the other side, and it's quite the journey. So I think that there will be something for everyone in this production. It's got humor, so it's very funny. I really enjoy making people laugh, so I did try to lean into the humor of it. So it's funny, but it's also very heartfelt. I think that the greatest challenge of putting your own story out there as a memoirist or as a solo play creator is being vulnerable, and this is definitely an act of vulnerability.
Are you concerned about the future of the movie-going experience in theaters?
I am. I think that, you know, COVID absolutely accelerated so much change in many different industries, and entertainment and the movies are absolutely another one of those. And we see now that independently run theaters are an endangered species. But there are special places. I mean, when I think about the Gateway, it was a community mainstay. It was a place where people gathered, where, you know, you can get out of the heat and, you know, enjoy a movie and be comfortable, where you could get really excited about something. So if there's a story that you're really entranced with, something that you love to follow, like I think about Star Wars, for example. I remember when one of the Star Wars movies came out when I was working there. Just there's such a sense of community and excitement that is very unique to the movies, and it's almost like attending a concert or a play or another live event, where you get to go and you dedicate this time and attention to really be able to enjoy it without the distraction of other screens or just everyday life around you.
And more or less, you're in the dark.
You are.
Mandy Pennington, Senior Director of Digital and Strategic Initiatives at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, speaking about her one-person play titled Girl Walks Into a Movie Theater, to be presented by Diva Productions at the Old Brick Theater, 126 West Market Street in Scranton. Shows Friday, February 27th, and Saturday, February 28th, at 7:30 each evening. For reservations, area code 570-209-7766, 209-7766, area code 570. And for more information about Mandy herself, Mandy B. Penn, P-E-N-N, mandybpenn.com. It's Girl Walks Into a Movie Theater, a solo play written and performed by Mandy Pennington and directed by Simon Daniel. It's going to be presented by Diva Productions at the Old Brick Theater, 126 West Market Street in Scranton, Friday and Saturday, February 27th and 28th, at 7:30 each evening. For reservations, area code 570-209-7766.